Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Greatest Mixtape Podcast. My name is Eric.
And my name is Mac.
And keeping in the theme of late, we have another guest on the show. We've had a lot recently.
We have. It's been great.
It's been a lot of fun. Tonight should be no different. Our guest tonight, he's a true original. Along with his outlaw country roots, his rock influences include artists like Tom Petty, the Black Crowes, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Motorhead, Ozzy, the Foo Fighters, White Stripes, Stone Temple Pilots. He's got a well-rounded palette when it comes to music, and I think that shows in his music as well.
Absolutely, and we've been wanting to have an episode that had a little bit of a country flavor to it for a while.
Yeah.
So this is a great chance to do that and incorporate some of those rock and alternative elements as well. But his music is just that. It's that unique blend of country, rock, and alternative. You could call it y'all-ternative. He's the son of country music legend Travis Tritt, but he's forging his own path and doing it his way. His new single, Wannabe, is out now. Please welcome to the podcast, Tristan Tritt.
How's it going, guys? Thank you so much for having me.
Dude, it's going great. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, man, our pleasure.
Oh, dude, pleasure's all mine.
I should have included in the intro, I saw on your Instagram, you do one hell of an Ozzy Osbourne impersonation.
Oh, man. Thank you.
That was fantastic.
Years and years of practice.
And we've been fans of Ozzy a lot longer than you, and we can't do it that well. So great job.
Yeah, for sure.
He's just one of my biggest heroes. So obviously you're going to emulate, you know, the people you look up to growing up. So it was pretty easy to kind of impersonate that.
So let's jump into this and let's talk about, you know, the alternative movement, because if you came up with that term, I hope you trademarked that because it's brilliant.
It's awesome.
I wish I did.
But explain that a little bit to us, because obviously we're familiar, and a lot of people I'm sure are familiar with like the alt country movement, you know, old 97s, Wilco, drive-by truckers, that kind of vibe. But the alternative seems to have much more of a rock edge to it.
I forget who I was talking to, but that it kind of came up like in a joking way. But I was like, that's a good way to describe, because everyone tries to ask me, you know, what your sound is and what, you know, what genre. And I've always hated that question just because I've always, you know, one minute you could be more in like in a rock mood, and next you want a little bit more of Western swing. Next you want a little bit more funk, reggae inspired, whatever you want to do. And it's, I get people, especially if they're not familiar with you, they want to lop you into a category just because it's helpful to familiarize you with someone else that they've listened to. But the whole essence, at least to me, has been a lot of analog sound, drums, guitar, bass, all the good stuff, and then adding just the Southern flair to it. And, you know, in the beginning when I first got started, I was kind of disregarding my accent and really almost overcompensating for it by like over-enunciating and trying to sound like my heroes from more Northeast states or Pacific Northwest. But the alternative sound to me, I think, is a perfect blend of those, you know, the rock and the Southern worlds. And Black Crowes, I think, were a perfect example of that.
You know, we talk about the Black Crowes a lot, and, you know, that's just great that you bring them up. I remember seeing them way back in the day when they were, you know, on that first album tour opening up for ZZ Top.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that tour, hearing the stories.
Yeah, yeah. So much fun, and just a great band to see live. Always have been.
Yeah. I was fortunate enough to see them somewhat recently, but, I mean, you're a Georgia boy, right?
All right. Born and raised.
Chastain Park. Have you ever seen a show at Chastain Park?
I absolutely have. Yeah, I saw them two years ago at I think it was Lakewood Amphitheater or Ameris Bank, but it was
okay.
The Driving and Crying opened, and it was so incredible because
yes.
they did the whole Shake Your Moneymaker tour or the whole album, and Chris Robinson did not change the key one time on any of the songs. It was incredible to me.
Wow.
Not one time. It was like he just sang it like it was, you know, brand new. It was unbelievable how talented that whole band is, but just Chris alone too.
Well, speaking of the Black Crowes, I mean, we touched on some of your other influences in the intro, but can you maybe expand on that a little bit? You know, what were your influences growing up? And then today, is there a lot of stuff? Is there new stuff out there that kind of gets your creative juices flowing too?
Sure thing. So growing up, my dad obviously was in the country music world. So he never strayed away from exposing me to all the greats, Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings,
yeah.
Marshall Tucker Band, Lynyrd Skynyrd, all that stuff. But around the age of, I think it was like 9 or 10, right when Guitar Hero was getting really popular among people my age, I discovered Black Sabbath and Motorhead and all these bands that I really had no clue about from that video game. And after that, it was off to the races. I just fell in love with anything from like 70s metal all the way into the, you know, 90s grunge hair metal. I just became obsessed with the guitar riffs, the bombastic performances, everything about that. Just it really got my attention in a way that my dad didn't he never really understood, but he always kind of pushed me to follow the music that gets your attention, because he was the same way. You know, my grandfather wasn't really a huge fan of the Hank Juniors and stuff like that at that time, but it was, you know, you find your own path. But the older rock was definitely what has motivated me. It's what I listened throughout high school, middle school, and still to current day. And you're talking about newer artists. There's a ton, and surprisingly, I think it's more in the country world that I'm seeing some of the best bands I've seen in probably the last 15 years. And they have rock elements to them, but there's one from Nashville called Dexter and the Moon Rocks. There's one, Treaty Oak Revival from Texas. There's just a ton of these great new bands out there that are really doing something special. You can tell they have influences, but like me, they're still trying to have their own individual fingerprint, which is just, you know, it's super motivational.
That's awesome. And we love, you know, getting exposed to new stuff. It's one of the fun things about doing a show like this, you know, between guests coming on and telling us about new stuff, or, you know, listeners sending us emails. Oh, if you guys like this band, check out this band. It's such a great time to be a music fan too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And there's so much music now available. I mean, sometimes it's a little daunting. Because what is it, like 60,000 songs a day being released on Spotify alone? But if you've got people with a good ear, it definitely helps, because they can always put you in the right directions to maybe bands you've never even heard of before, or artists you've never heard of. And that's always, it's always fun discovering those.
So I have a bit of a follow-up question. Was there a moment in your life where you kind of had that aha moment where you caught the music bug, or did you just know, like, basically from birth that, like, this is what you were born to do?
I think everyone has those moments when they're growing up, you know, when you're singing with your hairbrush in your hand and it just, like, in your mind, that just seems like the ideal thing to do. But growing up in music, there was always something that I almost got through osmosis by standing on the side of the stage and working in as a production assistant. And you feel the unison that a live show can do, where people from different walks of life are all in agreeance of one artist or a festival. And for 90 minutes to a couple hours, everyone's just like, it's the most unified I've ever seen people. And that was one of the biggest things that caught my attention at 18, where I was like, this is what I want to do. I just want to bring people together and actually make them forget stuff for, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours, whatever it is. And that's just always been kind of my ethos for it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We actually touched on this on a recent episode, and you described it perfectly. It's so tribal. Different walks of life coming together. You've got that common interest. You all love that artist, even if you're from different backgrounds, but everybody is there for that one reason. And it's the greatest feeling in the world. Like you said, those 90 minutes or whatever, when the artist is on stage and everybody's vibing, it's just so cool.
It really is. And it's cool to see the new fans come in with the, you know, the diehards. And if there's a good community behind it, there's encouragement always. It's like, oh no, check out this album or check out the B-sides on this. I love that camaraderie and community that comes with, you know, concerts and bands and just music in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I mentioned on our last episode too, I had just seen AC/DC. They just did a North American tour. And, you know, there's people there, there's kids that are 5 years old all the way up to people that are, you know, 65 years old. And it was like this multi-generational family experience. And I was there with my 10-year-old daughter, you know, like it was so cool. Like, it, you know, a band can bring all these people together from all these different ages. Everyone has different backgrounds. And it was just it was the coolest thing.
Oh, I experienced the same with Metallica a couple of years back. My brother, he's 4 years younger than I am, and he had just turned 18 at the time. So I took him out, and it was just, like you just said, it was anything from little kids to people in their 60s and 70s enjoying it. Like, it was such a universal experience for everyone. And getting to expose my brother to that, and he was a newer Metallica fan, and be like, yo, like, this is here, this song's from this album. So, like, now he's hooked for life. And that was one of the coolest experiences.
That's awesome. A good big brother right there, man.
Yeah.
I try.
Let's get into your music a little bit. Let's talk about, you know, in 2022, your first singles, you know, Oblivion, Right on Time, drop. And you touched on it a little bit, how your sort of your sound is evolving since then. You know, and that's only 3 years ago, but you're taking on a little bit, you know, you're a little bit different sound. You want to just expand on that just a little bit?
Of course. The first two singles. That was the first time I'd ever gotten to a recording studio for real. And especially in Nashville, I had all session players. It was like the old school way of doing things. And it was one of the coolest experiences I could have had for that time. But what it taught me as time went on and I started working with other producers and people that were, you know, operating out of their bedrooms, just the amount of sound you can create now with modern tech. And I was kind of always poo-poo, very pro analog, but I think there's a way to mix the old and the new and not compromise one or the other. So with sound mm-hmm. being my top priority and, you know, wanting to write the best and create the best song I can, implementing all these new tools and stuff throughout the years has been a massive advantage for me. And it's also kept me in line and also brought me back, funny enough, to more of the traditional styles of recording where it's just like, hey, you and the guitar or just you and the kit or something, you know, you can get the best of both worlds in that way. So I think it's expanding and it's always going to be expanding because I just love to learn more about the new tech that's dropping every single year. So it's an ongoing process, but I love being a part of it.
Yeah. And, I'm with you when a lot of this new tech was coming out and, you know, Pro Tools and drum machines and all of those things, you know, I was very anti all of it as well, man. And, yeah, at some point you have to embrace it because you're not going to change it, and fighting right. it, kicking right. and screaming is going to do no good. So you have to embrace it, but also recognizing, and I think listening to some of your music over the last couple of weeks, I feel like you're doing that. It's embracing what works for the song. You know what I mean? Sometimes there's just a song that, like, man, just a you know, a program beat is perfect for the song. We don't need a live drummer. We don't need that feel. We really want that mechanical kind of vibe to it. And then so you do it, you know. And then other times you're like, oh no, man, this needs to swing. It needs to be, you know, it's bluesy or whatever. And you know, a live drummer, there's no better for something like that. So, you know, again, hearing a lot of that in your music. So I think that's important for younger artists to recognize too, that a lot of this tech it's not bad.
No. And it's a tool at the end of the day, but I think, and this is just my kind of thought process on what the future is going to entail. Obviously with everything being digitized and AI being what it is now and it growing day by day, I think that more people are going to crave the more human sounding elements of music that is it's the reason why old records are so timeless. It's like you can listen to Dark Side of the Moon in 2025 and it still takes you to a place. And those kind of records, I think that's going to be more and more prevalent as time goes on, because they're going to want to hear the humanity and not just something that's, you know, completely perfect and quantized and written by, you know, a chatbot that knows how to structure. They want the little imperfections. And that's something I'm leaning into more. It's like, oh, it's not supposed to be perfect. It's supposed to be human for that very reason.
It's organic. I mean, you know, listen to old punk rock. I mean, it doesn't get more sloppy and, you know, but you can't match that energy and that vibe.
No, absolutely. And those old punk records were huge. First off, the drumming on punk records needs to be talked about more because it's so intense and it's incredible how dynamic. They're so dynamic, but even the essence, like the vocals on punk, I never really understood it at first. I'm like, this is terrible. But then after seeing a couple punk shows, you're like, oh, I get it. It's about it's the energy that it's all, you know, not trying to be too woo-woo with the shit, but it's definitely the energy that is behind all the words and all the screaming and the moshing. It's like, it's all an encompassing thing. And that it gave me such more of an appreciation of punk rock as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing like a live punk rock show. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can listen to the records all day long. And if you've never been to a show, I don't think you're going to get it fully.
No, you know? No, not at all. First punk rock show I ever saw was in Arizona, and the lead singer had a shock collar on his neck. I guess he was really big into Gigi Allen, but he had a shock collar on his neck. And he threw the remote into the crowd and people just started lighting him up. And I'm like, this is insane, but I love it. Yeah. I've never seen anything like that in my life. First show ever. I was like, that's a good way to get your cherry popped right there.
That's amazing. He's letting the crowd shock him.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was wild. Wild.
That's killer. Well, just circling back to some of the influences for a second, there was a big one that stood out to me, especially in both Oblivion and Right on Time. I feel like I was hearing some Beatles in there. Am I accurate with that? And are you a big Beatles fan?
Huge, huge Beatles fan. And funny enough, I've always been, me and my dad both agree on this, is we've always been huge Stones guys first. Like, I love the nice. Rolling Stones. I adore them. But obviously, Black Sabbath was hugely inspired by the Beatles. Ozzy's favorite band was the Beatles. So I was like, okay, if it's good enough for Ozzy, this is talking about back when I was like in, you know, ninth grade. I started looking back and I think I listened to Revolver and then Sgt. Pepper first. But those are those records where you listen to them time and time again and you catch little small nuances. It's like a Quentin Tarantino film. Right. But yeah, there's definitely been those kind of lingerings in my recordings. Obviously, I can't duplicate it the way they can, but it's just, I mean, they're timeless for a reason. And they're the Beatles. I mean, who doesn't want to have a little bit of the Beatles in their influence? That's like being an author and someone going, oh, I get a little bit of Hemingway in there. It's like, yeah, cool.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't too nervous about throwing that question out there because I'm like, nobody's going to come on a show like this, a musician, and say that they're not a Beatles fan. Right, so I was pretty confident throwing that one out there.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, just, you know, the very first time I heard those two songs, I was like, oh, I'm hearing that influence. I'm hearing the Beatles in there somewhere. Like, it's, there's layers and I'm like, they're in there. I can hear them.
Absolutely. And a big part of that, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it right now. The producer that worked on me with those first two tracks was a guy by the name of Leroy Powell. And he's done the Whiskey Myers album, Firewater, which is one of the best modern day country rock albums you've ever heard. He's a genius and a virtuoso when it comes to sound and playing on the guitar, and he's a multi-instrumentalist. So he nudged me in the right direction with
creating something great, you know.
Well, cool. Let's get into 2024. You dropped an EP called What Are We Doing? There's a couple songs on there that just standout tracks for me when I heard them. The first one being Sick of It.
Yes, sir.
I mean, there's an anger there. There's some punk energy there. That just jumped out at me right away. Like, wow. Like, again, I've been listening to it for like 2 weeks now. I just love it.
Oh, thank
you
so much.
But then Rose Colored Lenses. That song, and it represented great songwriting when I heard it.
Oh, thank you.
There's, you know, between the lyrics and the melody, and it sort of sets a mood, that song. Mm-hmm. And earlier this year, we did an episode dedicated to Sunday morning music, you know, the songs that just make your Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. When I heard Rose Colored Lenses, I'm like, yo, that's going on my Sunday morning playlist. Like, that, there's something about that song that just kind of carried me away, and I was like, it's a beautiful song. I mean, I think that's something you should be really, really proud of, that song.
Well, that song, and I like the fact that you mentioned Sick of It beforehand too, because those are kind of like the juxtapositions. Sick of It was it was a tongue-in-cheek, very, you know, kind of pissed off, talking about your ex-girlfriend, drunk texting and all that stuff. And Rose Crow Lenses came from a lot more of a sympathetic place because it was about someone that I knew that was kind of struggling with addictions and just things that were kind of encompassing their life. So I wanted not only the lyrics, but I wanted the sound to be not only compassionate, but I wanted it to sound hopeful. I wanted it to sound like the sun rising. I wanted it to sound like, you know, something that was something positive. So that song really does stick out to me. And I appreciate you mentioning that, because that song means the world to me just because of knowing the backstory and what went into it. And also seeing, I've got recordings of when I first started playing it, and then hearing the end product of the song now is so, it just makes, it makes me really appreciative of how powerful music is, because seeing that song go from where it started to all the cool little nuances and elements inside of it, it just made it that much more special to me, you know, which I'm sure every single songwriter says, but like that, it really did stick out. And I was like, I hope I can write something like that again, you know?
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, like, you know, when you hear a song the first time and it hits you, right? You sit back in your chair and you're like, oh shit.
Thank you.
Yeah. And to Mac's point, you know, lyrically, it comes across very honest, very real. When you write lyrics, I mean, are they all from personal experience, or is there some fiction in there as well? Are you inspired by other things other than, you know, your own personal life, movies, books, things like that?
It's a majority of kind of autobiographical, but there are a lot of things I've wrote about, like, vicariously from either people who I've seen go through experiences or things I've read about or watched. It all just depends, but I try to, if I'm writing about stuff that's going on in my life especially, I try to have this tongue-in-cheek kind of tone to it, because I can't stand, especially being back and forth in Nashville, how serious some of these people can take themselves. And I'm like, okay, if you can't lean into the fact, like, we're all dumbasses at some point, we all make mistakes, like, if you're talking like your shit don't stink 24/7, it's like, I know you got some skeletons in your closet.
Yo, God,
yeah, you know, so I figured it's best for me to air them out before, you know, someone's like, oh, you know, got your asses.
Right, get out ahead of that.
Exactly, you gotta be self-deprecating.
Well, and I don't think, I mean, find me a hugely successful artist, and I'm sure they exist, but off the top of my head, I can't think of any, but find me a hugely successful musical artist over the years that does take themselves that seriously. Yeah. I just... Everybody. I mean, you talked about Ozzy earlier. I mean, find a guy who's got a better sense of humor in the rock world than Ozzy.
Exactly. Or Lemmy. I mean, Lemmy was one of the funniest people that's ever walked the earth. Like, I love...
1,000%.
Yeah, I love people like that. And all my heroes had that, you know, that sort of self-deprecating humor. And I think that just makes it... If you're an artist or you're a songwriter and you're trying to get people to relate to your lyrics, there's no better way of doing that than, first off, being genuine and authentic, but also showing them warts and all. That's just that to me. Yeah. That's how I respect people. I don't look at them. I don't look down at someone when I know that they're a flawed human. I relate to them.
It's a healthy outlook for life in general, man. Yeah, not just for songwriting, but I think, you know, everybody needs to live like that.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
So in 2025, the single "Stop the Ride." Another standout track for me, and it sounds to me it's about the grind of chasing your dream, all the hard work, and of course the doubt and everything that comes along with it. Am I doing the right thing?
Yeah.
Am I good enough? You know, all those things, and of course the determination that comes along with that, the highs and lows of, you know, the being on stage. We talked about this before, where, you know, those however many minutes your set is, it's the greatest feeling in the world,
of course,
and it makes all the crap that precedes it go away. You know, it makes it all worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's hard to convey that to people, especially if they haven't done it themselves. But I think there's a reason too why a song like Turn the Page by Bob Seger is so, you know, so prominent still to this day, because there's still elements of it, of anyone who travels for a living or anyone who's just, you know, going off to the military or something. They're away from the people that they love, they're out of their comfort zone. There's always going to be those moments of self-reflection and self-doubt that are going to, you know, rear their ugly head. And this is just kind of exposing all of that while at the same time talking about, you know, it's an endless road and there's more to go, but there's nowhere to hide. Like, it's an acceptance at the end of the day. You know, you just kind of, I've heard the phrase before, I can't remember who said it, but it's embrace the suck. And I think that's a great mantra to have, because there's a lot of suck.
Yeah.
I believe that was our Atlanta Falcons.
There you go.
After the 28-3 debacle. Yeah. Yeah. They embraced the suck. That was their motto the following season.
Oh, man. Let's jump into the new single, Wannabe.
Sure.
Again, lyrically grabbed me right away. And listening to, you know, right off, you know, Neck Deep, Head Above the Water, I'm Too Short on the Shoulders of My Father, you know, lyrics that everybody can relate to. And I was telling Eric earlier, you know, like, I lost my father 5 years ago, but I still feel like I'm living in his shadow in a sense.
Absolutely.
You know, he has such a, you know, the larger than life kind of personality, you know, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Of course, you know, loved him, miss him, all that, but you still feel every now and again, you're still in the shadow. And listening to that song, dude, I was like, wow, like it just hit me, mm-hmm. you know, like I felt it. I was like, wow, like this is some fantastic songwriting right here.
Thank you. And it's something that every man goes through in their life where they, in one way or another, they can either compare themselves to their father in a positive light or a negative light. And then towards the end of the song, obviously there's the goddamn, I've become my father. And there's a, you know, there's always a positive and negative of that. It could be something like you look in the mirror, you're like, oh my God, like I'm losing my hair. Like I'm something, anything like that. But it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those very human things that everyone goes through. And a lot of where that song came from was, first off, I wanted to write something that had a little bit of a Greek mythos to it. So I've always been a huge mythology fan. So I wanted it to be like the comparison of Icarus, the father and the son trying to fly too close to the sun. That's why I throw that lyric in there too. But mm-hmm. on top of the, you know, the Greek, what you would call it, throwing in the actual stuff that every man deals with the relationship with their father.
Yeah.
That's just something everyone can relate to. So I appreciate you enjoying the lyric. But yeah, it's just something we all... when I first released like the teasers, everyone was like, oh, is he like, you know, pissed off that his dad's who he is? I'm like, no, you're interpreting that. No, quite the opposite. I'm beyond proud. Yeah. I couldn't be more proud. It's just, you also have to, if you're trying to create your own identity, especially in a world that like music, where he's got such a strong identity, you'd be remiss not to acknowledge the fact that there is a massive shadow that you sometimes feel that you're standing in. And that's just, you know, that's part of life.
And like you said, all of us can relate to that. You know, all men can relate to those lyrics. For sure. You don't have to have a famous father.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's very relatable for everybody.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, 100%.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Are you ready?
I am ready.
It's time for the Ride the Lightning Round.
Oh, perfect.
Okay, so we did some research. You know, we went through your socials, found more of your influences, you know, so we're going to make this kind of tough on you. But at the same time, there's some stuff in here for fun, too. So we'll roll through these. You got 10 of these to throw at you. When we get done, if you need to go back and explain or defend, we can give you time to do that. But are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right, Eric, you want to kick it off?
All right, here we go. I'm going to come out swinging. Nirvana or Foo Fighters?
I got to go Nirvana.
All right.
Just for songwriting. Kurt was incredible.
Amazing.
Waylon Jennings or Willie Nelson?
Waylon Jennings.
Brooks or Dunn?
I'm trying to remember which one's which. I'll go with Ronnie Dunn.
All right, okay.
Guns N' Roses or Motorhead?
That's a good one. If I'm going to go the most of their catalog, I'm going to go Guns N' Roses. I'm going to get crucified for that, but Appetite for Destruction. That's one of those rare listen all the way through albums.
Yep.
It's a unicorn, man.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers or Lynyrd Skynyrd?
Tom Petty.
Johnny Cash or Ozzy Osbourne?
Ozzy Osbourne.
Sublime or Collective Soul?
Sublime.
The Black Crowes or the White Stripes?
Black Crowes.
All right. I got another Brooks or Dunn for you. You ready for this one? Big or Rich?
Oh God! Damn it! I know them both. Big.
That's the stupidest one on the list.
Hey,
I'm sorry.
Big Kenny's a sweetheart, so I'm gonna go with Big.
All right.
All right. Last one. You ready for
go
this?
Ahead.
Better hair in the '90s. Billy Ray Cyrus or Travis Tritt?
Oh, Travis fucking Tritt, man. What are you talking about? Now, better dance moves, Billy Ray. He wins that all day.
Oh my God, that was great, man.
By the way,
great.
You need to make that a t-shirt and sell that at your merch table, man. Travis fucking Tritt.
Oh yeah,
is amazing.
Yeah.
That's too good, man.
I like that. That was exciting. That was fun.
Are there anyone that you want to go back and defend or expand upon or anything like that?
Okay, so Johnny Cash or Ozzy Osbourne? Tonality of voice-wise, and something that I can always go back to, is for some reason, I don't know if it was because it was the first thing that I was really exposed to that was my own. I knew Johnny Cash before Ozzy, but I think the just something about Ozzy's voice to me is it's almost comforting in a weird way. So I have to defend that. But another one too, it was Sublime and Collective Soul. I wrote a song a couple years back and stayed with Ed Roland, who's a genius. And I would be remiss if I didn't give Collective Soul their due, because Ed really is the mastermind of that whole thing. The whole band's talented, but
oh, yeah.
Ed is a super genius. Like, that guy's, the way he thinks creatively, it makes me feel like, you know, like a troglodyte. Like, I can't do anything. Like, he's the Willy Wonka of sound, and it's truly incredible.
Yeah, Eric, you said you see Ed around Atlanta quite a bit, huh?
Oh my God, yeah. We were just talking about this before we hit record. How, yeah, like I've seen him a million times. Like you go to an art festival in the park. I'm like, oh, there's Ed Roland.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
go to dinner at, like, for, you know, Easter dinner at some fancy place. I'm like, oh, there's Ed Roland. Yeah. I just see him all the time around Atlanta.
Yeah, especially when his hair's dyed blue, it's hard to miss him.
Yeah, right.
he's such a sweetheart though, and funny as shit.
No kidding. Well, now I have an excuse to walk up and introduce myself and say that, you know, we're pals. I will use this as an excuse to talk
please,
to Ed Roland next
please
time.
Please do.
I see
him. Please do.
Nice.
All right, man. That was a lot of fun, dude. Listen, I just want to get it out there. Check out Tristan and his music. Obviously, Spotify, Apple Music, anywhere you can stream your music, you got to check out Tristan's music. And check out the new single, Wannabe. Follow him on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. He's everywhere. Great, great, great social content that he's sharing on all three of those different channels. So if you're on any one of them, find Tristan Tritt and give him a follow.
Thank you guys so much for having me on.
You got it, man.
Yeah, thanks for being here, man. It was an absolute blast.
All right, till next time, y'all.
Oh, what do you say, Eric? You want to finish up with some shout-outs?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. We got some new and returning listeners we want to give shout-out to.
Love it.
Starting with Frankenthal, Germany. Düsseldorf, Germany.
Nice.
You know what I always think about when I hear Dusseldorf?
I don't know.
I think about Magnum P.I. And okay. He used to drink old Dusseldorf beer.
Wow, that's a throwback, bro.
Yeah.
Wow, that's some crazy trivia shit, too. I did not know that.
Imagine
old Dusseldorf beer.
Had useful information rattling around in my brain.
I'm telling you, man.
And we carry on. Apodaca, Mexico.
Sure.
Osaka, Japan. Milan, Italy, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Atlanta, Georgia,
sweet,
Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Roanoke, Virginia, Rahway, New Jersey, Thousand Oaks, California, Brookfield, Connecticut, Beckett, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we know what that's for. Ogden, Utah, and Eric, Wyalusing, Pennsylvania.
I'm impressed.
No,
I thought you were going to butcher that one. I saw it coming and I was like, ooh, he's gonna kill this one. Nope. Nice job.
Well, for all we know, I may have.
That's true. That's true. We may get some hate mail. Here I am patting you on the back. You might have gotten it wrong anyway.
But hey, if you're a fan of the show, you like what we're doing, rate us, review us, subscribe, follow us on socials. We're on YouTube and Instagram and Threads. If you have any show ideas or just any feedback, you want to tell us how much we suck, send us an email at thegreatestmixtapepodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, we're thick skinned, man. We can take it. If you know, we screwed
Actually,
up your, the name of your hometown. No, we're very sensitive.
Yeah, we're very sensitive. Please be kind. Please be kind.
Nothing but praise, please. We're very fragile.
Once again, thank you to Tristan Tritt.
Yeah, that was amazing, man. That was a lot of fun.
That was so much fun. He was so cool. He knew
Super
so much
cool,
about
dude.
Music. Oh my God. He was just a great guest and just a great guy to talk to.
And again, man, we've talked about this briefly before we went into the shout outs, but the amount of musical knowledge for a dude who's like half our age.
Yeah.
that was amazing, man.
Impressive.
I mean, yeah, really.
Impressive.
So yeah, Tristan, thanks so much for being on the show, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, can't thank you enough. Check out his new single, Wannabe, on Spotify or wherever you stream your music. But Eric, I think that's it.
All right. Well, once again, thanks so much for hanging out with us. This is the Greatest Mixtape Podcast. My name is Eric.
And my name is Matt.
And we will talk to you real soon.